So Rambo, we are celebrating a pretty significant milestone in the iOS community this week.
Really? What's that?
We are celebrating 10 episodes of Stack Trace.
Oh, that. I thought it was the 10 years of the App Store or something.
Yeah, that too. But it kind of only happens to coincide with our anniversary, right?
Ooh, we plan all of this.
Oh yeah, it was planned from the beginning. Part of our grand master plan to, I don't know, be celebrated together with the App Store.
Also, we are at the top of the iOS developer food chain because you know that after senior, there's podcast host, right?
Oh yeah, I saw that joke on Twitter. That was very funny. Yeah, it's like junior developer, senior developer, podcast host. Yeah, that's it's a good career progression.
And then retirement.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we're just working on that last part. We'll see how that's going to turn out.
We completely skipped the airplane pilot phase.
Exactly. So Rambo, what are you working on this week?
Oh man, I hate myself. I come up with these completely crazy side projects and I can't not make them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make them and then I have another side project and...
Oh, I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
So yeah, still Chibi Studio season. I've been doing lots of stuff, lots of buggy builds coming out of test flight for my designer to pull his hair out. I send the build and then I messaged him on Slack, hey, this one is buggier than the one from yesterday. Okay, don't panic, it's all right.
It's the buggiest version of Chibi Studio ever made.
Yeah, pretty much every build since last week is the buggiest version. The current one is randomly shuffling your chibis in the home screen, which is really funny.
That sounds like a feature.
Get new chibis every day with machine learning.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I've been doing lots of that. We need to prepare our iOS 12 release, playing around with shortcuts a lot, and my new side project, which we're going to talk about in more detail later.
Yeah, exactly.
And you, what have you been doing? Driving your car? I know that.
Yeah, a little bit back and forth between the store and home. And also, I've been doing a bunch of web development, like we also talked about on the last show. Well, I mean, I say web development, but I really just mean Swift kind of generating static HTML. So it's more writing Swift code than anything else, really. And I don't know if I talked about it on the last episode. I don't think so, but... since I'm a little bit crazy, I have also written my own syntax highlighter for Swift. So I have a Swift script that can take any Swift code and it will annotate it with all the right kind of syntax highlighting, depending on, you know, if it's a class or a function call or whatever. And it can do it all in pretty much constant time and it can do it line by line. So you don't need to like compile the code and things like that. And this has been a really fun project. It's, again, one of those, like you mentioned, you know, you start it, you're excited, and you're like, oh, what did I get myself into?
Yeah, so is that doing, like, regular expressions and stuff?
It's not, mostly because I have no idea how to write regular expressions, even after all these years of programming.
Basically, that's two of us.
Yeah, my go-to kind of solution for regular expressions is... For example, when I have to do it for like email validation or whatever, it's like Stack Overflow. Always. Or find some library that does it or something like that. I have never bothered to memorize the syntax for regex. So what I do is that I have instead this kind of rule-based system where you can define different rules about syntax highlighting, and then the system kind of goes through them and then tokenizes the code based on those rules. And it's a little bit, you know, maybe it's not like the most elegant approach that you would take for something like this. Maybe, you know, writing just a long series of regular expressions would be, I don't know, more elegant for some people. Using like the Swift compiler itself would probably be more future-proof and maybe more elegant as well. But this solution really nails the kind of trade-off for me between simplicity, because it's only like 200 lines of code, and also flexibility, because... As Swift changes, which we know it does a lot, I'll be just able to like add and remove rules or modify them. So I think I'm pretty happy with the solution, at least so far.
Yeah, and I've seen the results and they are very impressive. And they use your theme, of course, which is the best theme ever. So
thanks.
The results are really, really good. And I actually want to get early access to that.
I think we can arrange that.
To you about that.
We can arrange that, yeah.
You can give me a license.
Yeah, for sure. A special license, the Rambo license.
Awesome.
I am thinking about open sourcing this. I need to, in that case, kind of generalize it a little bit more because right now it spits out HTML with my kind of CSS classes and things like that that I have for my site. But it might be worth open sourcing it just because a lot of people seem to be interested in it. And I think it's a pretty interesting solution. Even like I said, it might not be the most like scientifically correct solution, but I think still it's an interesting project.
Yeah, this is something we need to talk about in more detail in a future episode, but it's very hard to just throw something out there as an open source project and that's it. You need to be careful about what you release, and if you want to have an open source project out there which is just like, hey, here's this thing and here's how it works, use it, and please do not complain, do not ask questions, that doesn't work.
No, so exactly.
You have to think about what you release, and we should talk about this in more detail in the future because it's an interesting topic, which we've talked about in length offline.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a big challenge with open source, but yeah, we'll get back to that on a future episode. And also, if you're interested in more about this topic, on the last episode of Swift by Sundell, my other podcast, I talked to Ryan Nystrom about this from Instagram, about kind of open source maintenance and these kind of things. So there'll be a link in the show notes to that show. Plug.
Yeah, that was a great episode. And I love AgeList Kit. It's the only external dependency that's still not been removed from Chibi Studio.
Oh, wow. They should have that as like a badge on the README, not removed from Chibi Studio. Survived the great purge of open source libraries.
Oh, yeah.
So we did something cool this week. We did another edition of our after show. And this is our monthly live stream that we do for our patrons. And this is a lot of fun. We are always looking forward to doing these. Of course, we're also looking forward to doing this show. But it's really cool to like hang out with people, do some live stuff. And on this episode, we did something really special, I think, which is that you did some live spelunking.
Yeah, we did some live spelunking, and I think our patrons liked it. And you even posted a teaser on Twitter, and I think people are really into that.
Yeah, so if you want to join our after show, both like for the future monthly live streams that we'll do, but also to kind of get access to the videos that we have recorded, you can just go to stacktracepodcast.fm/aftershow. And we think that this after show is a pretty great way for you to support the show if you want to, because it's $5 per month. You will help us get closer to be able to do weekly episodes of the show, which we really want to do. You kind of help us, you know, spend more time on it and produce more higher quality episodes and things like that. But you also get access to this reward, which we think is a lot of fun. So it's like more content, more Stacktrace stuff if you're into the show. So consider that if you have $5 to spare and you want to help support the show, just go to stacktracepodcast.fm/aftershow. You can read more about what this is all about and go to Patreon and sign up for it.
Yeah, and as we always say, the live show, the after show, is a special thing for patrons. So it's not like it's an extra episode of Stacktrace. It's very different from the podcast. So if you enjoy the podcast and you want something more and something different, sign up for the after show.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of live stuff, we just want to remind you again, or in case you didn't listen to the last episode, that we're going to do a live show, the first ever live recording of Stacktrace in front of a live audience at NS Spain this September. And tickets are not yet sold out as of the release of this episode, but I think they might be close to getting at least sold out for this batch of tickets. So if you want to come to Spain in September, watch us do this show live, join an amazing, amazing conference full of great speakers and awesome topics. And of course, lots of wine and dinners and hanging out for the whole weekend. I think it's going to be amazing. Are you excited for Ennis Spain, Rambo?
Of course. And you owe me a dinner there.
Yeah, you have to remind me every single time, right?
Mm-hmm, of course.
It will be a good dinner, I promise. It will be a great dinner. You know, worthy of the prize.
Yeah.
So to find out more, you can go to ennisspain.com and get some tickets. You don't have to get any special tickets to join our live recording. It will be a part of the conference. And we hope to see you there in Spain in September.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right, so now we want to move on to the main topics that we have lined up for this episode. And of course, we joked about it in the intro, that is 10 episodes of Stack Trace, which we are super happy about. But of course, the main event is that we have 10 years of the App Store this week, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, I think we can plug our first ever episode where we talked about phone apps, really?
Exactly.
Which was my thinking when I first thought about the possibility of writing apps for a phone. And it changed a lot since then.
It totally did.
Yeah, so the initial App Store had something like 500 apps?
Yeah, I think it was 500. It's crazy. And now what do we have, 500 million?
I think it's even more than that.
Not more than 500 million, I don't think. Maybe more than 500 million downloads, but I don't think we have 500 million apps on the store.
No, downloads is over a billion.
Yeah, I think something like that. But yeah, the App Store has, of course, changed a lot. You know, not only in kind of how the App Store looks and behaves and these kind of things, but I mean, this whole kind of, you know, app phenomenon, this whole like microculture, or maybe it's not so much micro anymore, but this whole kind of culture and this whole industry that we are both part of and that a lot of people are part of has kind of just like sprung up during these last 10 years, which I think is really, really, you know, amazing and fascinating.
Yeah, I want to do a thought experiment of sorts.
Okay.
What would you be doing if the App Store didn't exist?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think we did a similar thing on our first episode, but with the iPhone, right? Like, what would we do if the iPhone... Because the iPhone turned 10 years as well. But it's a great thought experiment. Probably for me, I would still be doing like web development, backend development, things like that. That's what I was doing before the iPhone came out. And I would probably be, you know, happy doing that. But now I'm guessing even more happy. It's hard to tell. You have to ask John in the parallel universe where the App Store doesn't exist, what he feels. But yeah, I'm super excited that the App Store exists, of course. But even more so, I would say I'm just excited to see what will happen in 10 years from now, because software has changed so much during the last 10 years. So what do you think? What would the parallel universe Rambo do right now?
Well, very similar to yours. And I think the effect of not having the iPhone at all and not having the App Store for us third-party developers is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Assuming there wouldn't be like a blooming hack app development market, which there still is jailbreaking and people still jailbreak, and there are commercial jailbreak tweaks that make money for people. So that could be where we worked if there was no App Store. But I think just as you mentioned, I would either be doing web development or I would be doing video stuff, which I tried to do right after I quit web development because I couldn't take it anymore.
You had to go to like web development therapy and then do some videos. Like your therapist was like, just try something different, you know, make some videos, make something artistic.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you know, maybe in the parallel universe we are doing a podcast about web development, who knows.
Yeah, maybe. What would it be called?
I don't know. Web Trace.
Console.log.
Yeah. Oh, nightmares. All right. So there's a couple of interesting things that have kind of happened during these last 10 years. Of course, you know, there's been a big boom of, you know, apps. There has been some really interesting kind of questions and trends and things like that regarding like software pricing and how we view software with the whole app, you know, pricing and pricing really going down. But one really interesting trend that I think we should talk about a little bit more in detail is the design trend changes. So on 9to5 Mac, which you write for, there was this great article, which was the design evolution of the earliest apps. So taking a look at some of the apps that launched along with the App Store and how they've changed over these 10 years. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that article. But what are your kind of overall general thoughts about how design of applications has changed during these last 10 years?
It's interesting how design is like a trend that changes. Like if you watch videos from the 90s, and if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, the 90s were not that long ago, but it's a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But you look at the clothing and the hairstyles and you're like, oh, this is ugly, weird, ridiculous. But that was the trend at the time. And at the time, people thought that was great and they were looking great. So I think design has that aspect to it. So if someone came out today with an app that has lots of gradients and quote-unquote leakable UI elements, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe people would find it different and funny, but I think people would not like it that much. And when you look at iOS, even like iOS 6 UI these days, even though it looked great at the time and you can still appreciate the thought and work that went into it, it's not pretty. Like,
yeah,
you compare it to today's UI. And I know that some people are like really fond of those times and they miss that type of UI. I personally don't. So I think it's interesting how UI design is a trend like any other design thing. And you can look at something that looked great back like 4 years ago and today it's ugly.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting because design kind of goes through this life cycle where it's trendy and it looks fresh and modern and nice. And then after a little while, it looks old and dated and ugly and things like that. But then given enough time, it becomes kind of retro, right? So then it becomes like cool again. And like
nostalgic.
Exactly. Like you will have all these games now, for example, they use like, you know, they use pixel art and these kind of things that, you know, it looks like an old game, but it plays like a new game. And that is, I think it's very fascinating to see those like, how it kind of comes full circle after a little while.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And yeah, I have the feeling when looking at like Windows 95 stuff, it's ugly, but I feel a certain nostalgia about it. And even like macOS Tiger or something, like it looks weird and dated, but you do have that warm, fuzzy feeling because you remember the times and stuff. Yeah, it's an interesting aspect of design.
Yeah, totally. But one really interesting thing I think about skeuomorphism in particular is it also kind of served a purpose, because when the iPhone came out, it was like one of the first, or not the first, device that didn't like have a keyboard. It was all just one big screen. And the skeuomorphism kind of helped also anchor the UI kind of in reality, where a calculator would look like a calculator, a note would look like a note, and things like that. So I think also it served like a functional purpose to kind of help people familiarize themselves with how to use this brand new device.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Imagine if Apple came out with like what's the iPhone 10 today, 10 years ago. People would go nuts. people were like were criticizing the original iPhone, and I remember that very clearly, that some people saying like, oh, this device doesn't even have a keyboard. How is it going to work? No one's going to use this. It's not good enough for business. It's only good for watching videos or something.
Yeah.
It's just good for teenagers that want to listen to music. But yeah, that changed very quickly.
Yeah, it totally did. And I think a really interesting thing now that we're kind of seeing is this kind of move forward even to a kind of next phase of UIs, which is this more like gesture-based UIs that kind of very much respond to your touches. Look at the iPhone X, for example. Like, it's got all these really nice gestures where you move between apps and to the home screen. And I would almost argue that that kind of design is the next step. Like, we're kind of leaving flat design behind with the animations being very fixed and moving on to something that is way more dynamic.
Yeah, and it's not about animations. I think when we talked about this stuff, people associate it with pretty animations, but it's not about the pretty animations. It's about the fluidity of the interface. And
Yeah. That's
talked about in a WWDC session from this year, which we're going to link in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a great session.
So, and even we mentioned this before, and I have this feeling when I'm designing or implementing an interface for iPhone X, this feeling that my app is kind of like part of the hardware. So you have to think about the physicality of things, not only the look and feel aspect, but the physics and the ergonomics of how people are going to use your interface. So at that point, the software becomes hardware, because you have to start to think about the physical aspects of your software when you have basically something that's just a screen and that's it. So you have to start thinking about this physical aspect of how people are going to use your software.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many aspects of the iPhone X that kind of, you know, makes that happen. You've got the OLED screen where black is really black. So if you are building an app that has more dark interface, the kind of screen kind of disappears a lot more and the content kind of even pops more. And that is something you can really take advantage of when both when designing something and when implementing it. And the same thing also goes for like this edge-to-edge screen where, you know, now we're more encouraged to kind of make these panels that pop from the bottom and things that you know, respond to your touches and gestures. And I think it's really cool. And I think you nailed it there by saying like you are basically building right on top of the hardware, right? Like your app becomes part of the hardware. I think that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, you've seen the new interface for the editor UI in Chibi Studio in dark mode on iPhone X.
And it's beautiful.
When I was designing that, I was thinking about, I wasn't thinking in terms of I'm designing an iOS app interface, which can be dangerous because you can completely forget about the guidelines and make it hard to use. But I was thinking more about I'm turning this device into a chibi building device.
Yeah, exactly.
Of sorts. And I was thinking more about the device itself rather than how is this going to interact with the system. And I think that that's a good approach. And of course, it doesn't work for every type of app. But I think for a creative app, which people spend a lot of time on, it makes sense to do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've got a lot of listeners to the show who are developers who might now be thinking, you know, why should we be this into kind of design and, you know, these design trends and things like that? And personally, I think it's really, really motivating to be an iOS developer right now, because a lot of the design things that are happening are really kind of enabling us as developers to do a lot of things when it comes to design. And I'm not saying that to say like designers are not needed or something. Of course not, because, you know, we are two developers talking about design. We're probably getting a lot of things wrong, but that's
fine. Yeah, I could have hired a designer for Chibi Studio and had like an interface that was 500% better than the one I made. I could just explain my idea and have a designer build it, but I don't have the budget for that, so I made it myself. But yeah, just like you said, we are not saying that designers are not necessary. They are very much needed.
Yeah, absolutely. But the cool thing is that since we don't need to create this like rich textures, we don't need to be Photoshop experts, we can design a lot of UIs using like math and code and responding to gestures and shapes and colors. And I think that is really motivating because it's really made me personally kind of try to dive deeper into design and make it understand it better, which I also think, you know, is really a good asset when it comes to being an iOS developer in particular, because so much of what we do when we're building apps are about, you know, the UI and about the user experience and things like that. So I personally think it's really empowering and motivating kind of to see this trend.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before that I'm a developer that's focused on designing and user experience. If someone offered me two options, do you want to spend the rest of your development life doing only UI development or only like model database data crunching development? I would definitely choose the UI development. And I know that that's not true for all developers. So I think that there's space on the market for different types of developers.
Yeah, and that is awesome. I think that's really great. And, you know, with web development, we've seen this happen already where you have this split kind of between front end and back end. And of course, depending on the project, some people call themselves full stack developers, right? but the same thing is kind of happening as iOS apps are maturing, becoming more complex and things like that as well, where you might have iOS developers that are more kind of back end iOS developers and some people who are more focused on the UI. And I think that's super cool. I mean, I think it's great if you can know a little bit of everything, of course, but specialize on certain parts. I think that's it's really cool.
Yeah, like on my day job, I spend a lot of time when we are not doing like we are currently working on localization stuff. So we are all working on pretty much all layers of the app. But I spend a lot of time basically building components for my colleagues to use. And I think of that more as like a back-end position because I'm creating these components that enable other developers on the team to create the features that need to be created. So you can think of me in that example as a back-end iOS developer.
Yeah, exactly. So it's great that you get to do some front-end iOS development during your, you know, spare time and on your hobby projects.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I enjoy doing both. But I really, if I had to choose, I would definitely choose the front end aspect.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally understandable. For me, I think it will be harder because I love to nerd out about code. As some people might know, I love to dive really deep and I love to write blog posts about it and, you know, and investigate things and experiment with code. I would have a really hard time because I'm really into design, but at the same time, I'm also really into this, getting deep into code and different techniques. So yeah, well, thankfully I don't have to choose right now. So that's good.
Yeah, we don't have to choose.
Yeah. So now we've had 10 years of the App Store, which is pretty cool. But what do you think that the next 10 years might look like? Like, what do you think is kind of on the horizon that we can see now? What do you think the App Store, if there is even an App Store in 10 years, what do you think it will look like?
Well, I think, as we've been mentioning in this podcast, I think the concept of this monolithic app that you is an icon that you tap and you enter this whole new world, I still think it's going to stick around for quite a while, maybe even more than 10 years. But I think we are going to move more and more towards apps as services, in a sense, where you get something that could be still called an app, but that app permeates the entire system and not only your single device like your iPhone, but all of your devices like the watch, HomePod, the TV, and the glasses, which we know they're coming in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And the car, right? The Apple car and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I think we already are seeing some really significant evidence of this move, and I think it makes total sense. As we get more and more platforms, as we get more and more form factors, and just like a bigger kind of diversity among the devices that we have. You know, we have small phones, large phones, we have TVs, Macs, etc., all those things. I think it makes a lot of sense for apps to become more like services, and for the app itself to kind of just become the UI of the service. And now we're going to talk about it a little bit later on the show about shortcuts. I think is definitely something that is pushing iOS very, very far in this direction, where now essentially you could use a series of apps just as kind of commands running in the background as services. And I think this is really something that is very, very cool. And I think it's a good direction for iOS to head in. As the devices become more powerful, they have better battery life, and things can happen more in the background proactively. They don't always have to be you going into your mail app, selecting some text, copying it, moving over to your Messenger app, sending that text. It can be more fluid than that.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're a developer or a company that does development and you're thinking, how can I be ready for the changes? Well, I would say start by making your apps as modular as possible. Don't think about your app as a single thing and as a single target and only one process. So start breaking it up into separate components, frameworks, build extensions to test that your modularity is working. And also study a little bit of AR, because I think that that's going to be more important when the glasses come out.
It's a pretty safe bet, yeah, considering how much Apple is kind of pushing it and being excited about AR.
And I'm going to say it again, it's completely useless on phones and tablets.
But and I'm going to say that I don't fully agree, but we're going to save that for an AR special episode.
Yeah, but yeah, they are preparing the territory for the glasses.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with you. Like, building apps in general in a more modular fashion is usually a good idea. Of course, you can take it too far and have everything be super modular, generic, and that's not good either. It's kind
one
of hard
framework
to maintain
per class.
Yeah, exactly. That's usually not the best trade-off, right? But especially now, you also mentioned with the extensions, like if your app supports like only like a handful of extensions, which is not uncommon these days, because you have everything from like push notification extensions to today widgets and all these things. It makes a lot of sense to have a more modular code base. And whenever I talk about this with someone, I'm always kind of joking that this framework-driven development, if you want to call it that, like separating things into modules and frameworks, it's kind of like client-side developers finally discovering microservices, right? That has like been around on the back end for a long time. Because again,
yeah,
just like we talked about earlier, it's like now iOS has been around for, you know, 10 years. It's maturing. The apps are becoming more complex. So we are becoming more in need of these like more advanced architectural techniques.
Yeah. And just changing from having no extension to one extension is already a huge difference. So if your app doesn't have any extensions at all, start by creating one and seeing the problems you have. And yeah, add as many as you can, because extensions are cool.
Gotta catch them all. Catch all the extensions. So yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that the App Store will probably be more focused around services. Maybe you could even just get a service kind of on demand. Maybe you don't need to go get the app, because that's something that is a little bit awkward sometimes. For example, if you want to have a custom keyboard, you have to get that app, right? And I think that's something that's only there to kind of satisfy the current model and the current kind of architecture of the system. But that's something that I at least hope is going to kind of go away, that you could just get the keyboard, you can just get the iMessage app, or just get the service that you are interested in.
We're not playing poker, but to say that for iOS 13, that's going to change already.
You think so? Already?
Yeah. I think you will be able to at least get an app for like a keyboard and not have the icon show up in Springboard.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the icon or the app can be used to have settings and stuff, right? But it's, I don't think it should be mandatory to have it that way.
Yeah, and the app can still be there, but it's going to just not be visible.
Right. Yeah, that would be an easy fix, right? Just hide it. Just
yeah, it,
app
and
icon
it's already
dot
possible.
Is hidden.
Yeah, like the an emoji on iPhone 10. It's an app called Jellyfish that has an extension inside of it called Animoji, and the Jellyfish app does not show up. So that's already technically possible. I just think they are going to expose that in iOS 13.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so moving on from the 10-year anniversary of the App Store, we have some news we want to talk about. Specifically, there was a report that Apple is reportedly deploying 1Password to all of their employees. And 1Password is my favorite password management app. I think you use it as well, Rambo, right?
Yeah, and I think people should stop thinking that every time an Apple blogger or podcaster say something good about 1Password, it's because they're being paid.
No, not at all.
Because that seems to be a trend now. You can't say good things about 1Password because people are going to think that they are a sponsor. So Full disclosure, they are not a sponsor. We don't have any sponsors at the moment. And if they were, we would say it very explicitly.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. No, we just love this app, both of us, and it's so much to love about it because it's super well designed. It feels, you know, very, very high quality. You know, it's native. It runs super well, and everything is really great about it. And of course, it integrates well with the system, and you can use it to manage all your passwords.
John, it's kind of like when people ask me, why should I use a password manager? I like to use an analogy to a calendar app because I've been using the calendar app and I use the built-in one. You could use a third-party one if you wanted to, but I just use the built-in one, and that basically eliminated having to worry about appointments from my life because I set up an appointment in the calendar, an event, and I tell it to alert me before in an appropriate interval. Sometimes it's a day before, sometimes it's 2 hours before, and then I don't have to worry, oh, I have the thing today and I can't forget. I won't forget because calendar will remind me. And password managers are like that, but for passwords. You don't have to worry about, oh, which password am I going to use for this website? Oh, should I use the same that I use for my bank account? So that's my analogy. So password managers are like virtual calendars. They lift the burden of having to worry about passwords from you. So you don't have to be always thinking about passwords.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. It's really, really good. And it seems like, you know, we love 1Password, and it seems like Apple loves 1Password. And it seems like they love it so much that they were even planning to acquire them. That's what it seemed like when this report first came out. But then AgileBits, the developers of 1Password, they quickly posted on Twitter that, no, we are not getting acquired. So I think this is interesting because, I mean, that Apple is kind of deploying 1Password, that's interesting in general. But it's also interesting, I think, to talk about, like, would Apple acquire something like this? Like, they created this much better integration in the system for third-party password managers in iOS 12. So the question is, do you think that they feel like they want to be in this game, in the password manager game?
Yes, but they have iCloud Keychain, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to just keep improving iCloud Keychain. And I even think that the fact that they opened up the API of Autofill for third-party developers this year means that they are not willing to put on the work that would be required to get iCloud Keychain to be as good as a dedicated password manager. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
they don't want to make iCloud Keychain be a 1Password or KeyPass or LastPass or something like that. So they just opened up the API for third parties and you can use the password manager of your choice. And I think that's the right approach. Is it crazy to imagine that Apple would acquire 1Password? Not necessarily. I think maybe they would, but I think it's clear that in this case, the report was inferring the acquisition from getting the app for all of your employees, and that's obviously not true. And I think if you have any company out there that needs to handle credentials between multiple employees, consider doing that for your company. It doesn't have to be 1Password. It can be any password manager, because that gives an incentive for employees to have a good online security hygiene, if you will. So they don't repeat passwords. You can expire passwords and stuff like that. So I think Apple is doing this with 1Password more because they want their credentials to be secure and they want their employees to handle their credentials safely. And if you think about it, if an Apple employee has his or her credentials stolen for some personal thing, like a Facebook account, that could end up compromising Apple in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not crazy to think, right, that Tim Cook, he's sitting there because it's, of course, Tim Cook making these kind of decisions, right?
Of course.
He's making all the decisions for the company. And he's sitting there, you know, he's looking at the bill for 1Password for all the Apple employees. And he's like, well, what's another couple of $1 million, right? Let's just buy the company.
Yeah, like, oh, we are spending $1 million per year in licenses. Let's just buy the company for like $10 million.
Exactly.
That's cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's mostly like kind of Apple using third-party software as a tool. And, you know, it's something they probably do a lot. I mean, it's not maybe always so publicly like available what they use, but of course they're using a lot of things that they didn't build themselves, like anything from, you know, design tools, you know, things like that, and production software, you know, anything that they need in order to do their work, they're not producing all of these things themselves. So I don't think that's crazy at all. And yeah, it's just cool to see Apple doing this stuff. And I hope also that they're going to be more public about these things, because I think also it's great sometimes for us in the community to kind of see what Apple is using and, you know, why they're picking the partners and the apps that they are picking, even though it might be, you know, considered unfair for the competitors.
Yeah, I have seen Apple's logo in websites for apps and services. So I think they are not against that. Mm-hmm. So if because of course the developers or the companies behind those apps needed Apple's permission to publicize that information. So I know that Apple uses Sketch, and they use they also use ScreenFlow, the screencasting software. So they obviously don't want to hide it. So I think if they are not willing to hide it, they should just be more open about it. I don't think it's unfair. It's just that they chose the better solution for them, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that has happened recently is that we have now gotten the beta of the Shortcuts app.
Whee!
And yay! And I know you in particular are very, very excited about this. And I'm excited too. I think it's really cool to see. And it's also something that we now can dig a little bit deeper into and take a look at, you know, how is Shortcuts working? And, you know, how will this whole system kind of fit together? Because we had one part, which was the Siri Shortcuts, you know, the NS user activity-based APIs that we've talked about before. But now we also have the app where you can construct these workflows, because it comes from workflow, of Shortcuts. So, Rambo, tell us a little bit about the Shortcuts app and your kind of first... let's start with the surface level impressions, okay? No spelunking for now. The surface level impressions of the app.
But I reverse engineered the app before running it.
Of course you did. You're like a kid who takes apart the toys before even, you know, starting to play it.
Yeah, I love this phrase, and I even used it in one of my tweets recently, which is by an Australian YouTube YouTuber. He makes videos and he does like teardowns of electronic stuff. And he always says, don't turn it on, take it apart.
Ah, that's a good one. So, that's a really good one.
I love that phrase and it resonates with me for some reason.
Yeah.
Shortcuts. So I don't know what got me so excited about shortcuts, to be honest, because workflow, I have used workflow before, but I don't know. I've never been super excited about workflow and super workflow nerd. But yeah, I think it's the fact that shortcuts has more power and is more integrated to the system. So that makes it more interesting to me. So shortcuts, you can create workflows. Can we call them workflows?
I think what else should we call them, right?
Yeah. So you create workflows. You connect actions which have an input and an output, and you choose some options. And you connect the output of an action to the input of another. And you chain several actions together to make a workflow. And the workflow can receive like an image or a text or a file, a URL. It can be lots of things. And then you do something with that and you return a result. So it's very functional in a way.
Yeah, it totally is. It's like UI-based functional programming. Yeah. I think it's really, really cool. And I think I have an explanation for you why you're so excited about this. And that is that, or at least this is how I feel about it. And I think maybe you feel similarly. You have to tell me if I'm right, which is that, like you mentioned, workflow was like a third party app, so it could not do everything. And it was amazing, considering all the limitations that an iOS app has, you know, very creative solutions, everything from like using, you know, calling out to the web and getting some data to using this like callback URLs where you can string together actions and different apps, they kind of just bounce between each other. You know, it's super cool solutions and really a like very big technical accomplishment, of course, and that's why Apple bought them.
And all of that while following the App Store guidelines.
Exactly. It's amazing. Yeah, it's really amazing. And I think now maybe the reason that the two of us are even more excited about this app than we ever were about workflow, even though it was really cool, is the fact that now it's so much more integrated. And like we mentioned earlier, it's very much a big step towards this more service-based app architecture, where you just have apps, they can just do things in the background, and it just feels like one more integrated experience, and it can be way more powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's the reason right there. And of course, now it has access to things that the regular third-party workflow wouldn't have, things such as controlling the brightness of the device and controlling do not disturb modes, airplane modes, getting your Wi-Fi network name. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you can. And that's even more impressive because even if you are an app developer, you can't do that in an app anymore. That's not allowed.
Yeah.
So that's even more amazing. So you can do things with shortcuts you can't even do with an app. So yeah, that's very, very impressive. And I think the one that had me excited the most was when I noticed that, Federico, he posted about you being able to run a arbitrary JavaScript code in the context of a web page in Safari using shortcuts, which is just amazing.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. And you can't run JavaScript right now using like JavaScript Core, which is Apple's kind of headless JavaScript engine where you can run JavaScript code without having a web page. You now have to jump out to a web page, run the code and come back. But still, it's really, really cool because now we can actually, even though we have to use JavaScript, which I know you're a big fan of, we can now do like coding and scripting in workflows.
And I'm just going to say this. I posted on Twitter yesterday that it would be cool if shortcuts had a run Swift code action.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people from the shortcuts team liked the tweet.
Ooh. So Swift code confirmed.
Yeah, not really, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah, they like the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be really, really cool. And, you know, we mentioned it a little bit on our after show yesterday, but I don't think it's too far-fetched to think about these kind of things, because now we have Swift Playgrounds, and we have server-side Swift, we have, you know, building apps using Swift, and it's very clear that Apple, they really want Swift to become this more like general-purpose language used in so many different contexts. And in many ways, it's a great language for that. And since they kind of, you know, control it themselves, they have the compiler, they have all the knowledge about it, I personally don't think it's super far-fetched to think that they would prefer to use Swift as a scripting language in something like Shortcuts instead of JavaScript.
Yeah, and they already have the infrastructure necessary for that with Swift Playgrounds, because it runs the Swift code in a sandbox, which is separate from the main app sandbox. We mentioned this yesterday in the after show, that it would be incredibly dangerous to let you run Swift code in the same process as Shortcuts itself, because the yeah. Shortcuts app itself has various entitlements, and it can get access to stuff that you wouldn't want any random workflow to get access to. But they already have all of the implementation to run a Swift snippets in a separate process, and they need to implement the getting inputs and spitting out some output to the workflow. So I think that's coming in the future, definitely. Maybe when they have a Shortcuts action extension target that iOS apps can have, so yet another extension type, Swift Playgrounds could implement that extension, and then it could be run inside workflow. Shortcuts. Yeah,
that would be amazing. Exactly. Yeah, that would be totally amazing. But for now, it seems the only thing you can do when it comes to third-party apps is that you can invoke like a predefined Siri shortcut, right? Where if you have like buy coffee or one of these things that they demonstrated during WWDC, you can invoke those as part of a Shortcuts workflow.
Yeah, it's actually not... the terms are a little bit confusing, so it's not predefined Siri shortcuts, it's any intent or user activity that's been donated by an app. So you don't have to have the shortcut created. So if you, let's say you open the milkshake ordering app, which is the example I'm going to give in a presentation next week. Uh-huh. So you open that and you buy a chocolate milkshake. When you go to create a shortcut, you can have the Siri suggestions, as they call it, and you're going to see order chocolate milkshake there, and you can just add that as part of your workflow. So, but the problem is that it's just a pass-through action, so it's going to, it's basically, for programmers, it's receives void and returns void.
Right. So
you,
it has to use singletons.
Well, more clearly, it receives whatever input was before it and returns the inputs as the output. So it's passed through. So
right.
Yeah, you can't give custom inputs or outputs. And that's a little bit sad, but hey, we got more than we asked for already. So I think that could easily be coming in iOS 13, maybe even before that, because Apple has been doing some pretty incredible minor releases, like iOS 12.3 could come up with something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And many of these changes are just like additive features. So they wouldn't necessarily like require a brand new SDK with brand new, you know, new WWDC to kind of explain it all. You could kind of add these things on top later as we go, just like they did with ARKit 1.5 and adding like vertical surfaces was a kind of additive change, right? So having these more custom actions in Shortcuts where you could have input output could just be something, you know, that comes later and doesn't necessarily break all your old workflows.
Yeah, and they have a fantastic tool for that, which is the WWDC app, which they could easily rename it to Apple Developer Videos app because they have been posting other videos that are not from WWDC. So like when the iPhone X came out, right after the keynote, they updated the app with new videos teaching about developing for iPhone X. And they are just like WWDC sessions. The only difference is that it's not live with an audience. So they have the tools to teach developers. And iOS developers in general are very eager to implement new features because that can get you featured, and the users are usually demanding that your app is always up to date. So, yeah, I think they could easily implement significant improvements in a minor release.
Yeah, and we also have to remember, like, this is pretty much programming, right? So it makes sense that developers like us and a lot of other people are really excited about this because it's actually coding automation for iOS, and it's making some of these use cases that were before either really cumbersome or impossible actually possible. And as developers, this is always really exciting. So I wouldn't be surprised either if they launch something like this and the developer adoption is huge, because we would like to use it ourselves.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, and this has been asked, I think, yesterday and today as well, someone asked me, do you think quote-unquote regular people are going to use this? And I think that's a really hard question to answer. I'm not sure, to be honest. I think the regular users are probably going to need a little push, either from a friend who's like nerdy, like us, or like from a campaign by Apple of some sort.
Uh-huh.
But I think that the better question would be, do you think regular people would be capable of using this? If that's the question, I say definitely yes.
Mm-hmm.
They implemented everything in a way that a person that's not very technical can understand and will be able to use. But yeah, there's the discoverability aspect of it. It's not a built-in app. I think maybe the fact that they decided to make it, keep it as an App Store app, could be because they don't see this as a feature that most people are going to use. So that could be a reason. But yeah, we'll see. But I think in terms of UX and how easy the app is to use, I think regular people can use it, definitely.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to remember that maybe not everyone will use it, you know, in every day and automate their entire life. And that's fine, because iOS now has been around for so long that it's natural for it to gain these more like niche features where, you know, a certain segment of the user base want to do something like this. They want to create more automation. They want to use these iOS devices more as like productivity devices. They want to use them for work. And creating some feature like this, like shortcuts for those people and those use cases, I think it's great. Not all features need to be for everyone. And they're not either. There's a lot of features that I don't use and I don't really care about. And it's not that I don't want them to exist. I think it's great that there are features for everyone and there are different kind of things that people will get excited about when it comes to using their phone. And another thing that's important to remember, I think, is that even though you might be a person who is not at all into coding, you might have a lot of things to do for your work that require these workflows, that require these like stringing things together. And like you say, maybe someone will show you, you know, you're doing these 10 things like 10 times per day. Let me set up a workflow for you or shortcuts to actually automate it. And I think that could be really powerful.
Yeah, and it happens sometimes. Like I gave my dad a new iPad for Christmas. And sometimes he'll ask me, hey, how do I don't know, let's pick a random example. I want to download a picture from a web page and add text on top of it on my iPad. How do I do that? And I can teach him all of the steps necessary, but now when Shortcuts is out, I can grab his iPad, create a shortcut for him, and say, hey, just tap the share button and select this item here, and it's going to pop up a dialogue asking for what text you want to put on top of the picture, and it's going to give you the picture with the text. So that's a silly example, but we as the nerdy friend or son or whatever of quote-unquote regular
lives.
People,
yeah,
we can help them with shortcuts.
Yeah, absolutely. And another way I like to think about these things is, you know, not all people use their Macs in these like advanced ways. They don't like use multitasking super much or copy paste things all over the place and, you know, use these devices, you know, in this more powerful way. But I think actually shortcuts might be even more accessible than that. If you think about, you know, to use a Mac, to use it in like the most powerful way with all the services it offers and, you know, knowing all the different features that you can do to kind of do these kind of more multitasking things, I think shortcuts could be even more easier to learn and be like a next generation of this kind of workflows.
Yeah, and the thing I'm going to use the most is the data querying aspect. I have lots of data that I need to query rather frequently, such as how much is the dollar, how much is the euro, how much is Bitcoin.
When are we recording the podcast? In what time zone?
How are sales of Chibi Studio doing today? And those are all things that can be queried from public APIs, well, not the Chibi Studio sales thing, but I have an API for that. So I can just set up a shortcut, set up a trigger phrase, and then I don't have to be opening apps or widgets or anything. I can just trigger that phrase and it will even work with my HomePod, because as a shortcut, you can basically return a phrase that's going to be spoken by Siri after the shortcut is finished. And that phrase doesn't have to be a fixed phrase. It can be, it can have variables and it can have content that's been gathered from an API or the result of running JavaScript in Safari on a web page. So the things you can do just in terms of querying data are very powerful.
Yeah.
And time saving as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we talked a bunch about like the kind of above the surface things about workflows and shortcuts and, you know, what cool things that they can enable. But now I want to know your spelunking findings. So I know that, you know, what you mentioned is that you took it apart before you even started using it. And we shared some of these really interesting details on our after show as well. We even did, like we mentioned, the live spelunking. But for the rest of the people listening to this show, what is under the hood of shortcuts and how similar is it to the workflow app?
So very similar. It's clearly still the same code base. They apparently have rewritten a lot of the UI in Swift. I'm pretty sure it was mostly Objc or all Objc before. So they're using Swift. And a very interesting thing, which people who are not developers totally won't care for, is that they're using Realm as a database.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you explain to non-tech people what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So Realm is a object mapper, as we call it, which is basically taking your data that you have in your app, like that could be different models that you have of users or articles, or in this case, workflows and actions, like the different types of data you have in your app. And it's a way to take that data and actually save it onto disk. So persist it in first in memory and also then on disk, so that later, you know, when you open up the app 2 weeks later, the same data is still there. So that's something that Realm makes a lot easier than if you do it the kind of raw way. And Apple, they also have their own, I don't want to call it a database framework because that's, they explicitly say it's not, but a way
that's
to...
That's a sin.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a way to persist data, which is called core data. And now we were joking also that You know, now that Apple is actually using Realm, does it mean that, you know, the discussion Realm versus Core Data is over? Of course not, because it's just a kind of artifact from using the same code base as Workflow, probably. But still, it's very interesting that Realm is still in there.
Yeah, and like, if you think about it, let's nerd out about it a bit. To migrate that data over to Core Data, you'd still have to ship the app with Realm for a long time until all users have been migrated. And if you're shipping the app with Realm embedded, then just ship and use Realm, because you have to include it anyway, so just keep using it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense to migrate. So yeah, they did the right technical choice there. Realm is a great solution, and I use it on several projects. And if you are an iOS developer, have a look at it. Try to use Core Data, and if you give up, go to Realm.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And it's very clear here that, you know, they took this platform that they have, they took this app, the Workflow app, and they just said, you know what we're going to focus our time on is not rewrite everything from scratch, which I think is great. Like, if you have something that's working and people love and it's stable and it's nice, why throw that away, right? Why would Apple acquire this company and then just throw it away? I mean, sometimes they do stuff like this, but I think it's nice to see not only that the people who were, you know, acqui-hired, they got to keep working on the same thing, but that they kept the same code base. It looks like it, at least. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, and not just the code base, but the philosophy, you can say, behind the app is still the same, which was a fear that Workflow lovers had when the acquisition happened, that it would basically die because Apple would just do it their own way and make it closed and not as flexible, which is not a stretch to think that they would do that. But the way this is working and the way they did it makes me think that it was part of the acquisition contract that it was going to be this way, because it's very clear that the same philosophy behind Workflow is still at play with Shortcuts.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I know that the people who work on this project on the Workflow app and now in Shortcuts are super passionate about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
They're super passionate about automation, and, you know, they wouldn't want to see it like being, you know, completely just dumbed down. Like, they want the opposite, right? And I think it's just awesome that that's what we're seeing. We're just seeing this kind of continuously evolving rather than being thrown away and replaced by something kind of inferior. It's now just taking that concept, taking that code base, and focusing on getting it integrated into the system.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they are very passionate, all of the team behind Workflow, and they basically became loved by the automation community, the iOS automation community. And they, because of their passion and the amazing project that they created, and I can definitely imagine the negotiations for the acquisition going on and it being like a condition for they accepting the acquisition, that we are going to do things in this way and we are going to keep the philosophy. And you can see how much they are loved by the iOS community just by how much applause they received in the WWDC sessions they presented.
Yeah.
You can see, like, when they step on stage, people go crazy because people love them and the product they created and the philosophy behind it. And I'm really happy that we managed to get the best of both worlds. So now they are part of Apple, and they have more power because they can get access to nice things that we regular developers can't. And they are still doing the same app with a new name and more powerful.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And you've also kind of jumped on this exciting new thing. And you also wanted to take it like a little bit step further, right? So you have created a new website and a new service called Sharecuts. I love that name, by the way. It's all about
sharing. That's Patrick's idea.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about shortcuts.
Yeah, so immediately after shortcuts came out, people went crazy with creating their own shortcuts, and me too. So I was creating my shortcuts, and people were sharing videos and screenshots and ideas, and then this subject came up on Twitter that, hey, wouldn't it be great if there was like a way for people to easily share their shortcuts with others? And I think it was Dave Mark from The Loop. He tweeted that, hey, someone should do this. And I even offered to help with curation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was, I think, Saturday morning. And then I started making that thing.
Of course you did.
And by Saturday night, I had a website up called Sharecuts. It's at sharecuts.app. And people can upload their shortcuts. And if you open up the website on a device with shortcuts installed, you can just tap a shortcut card and it's going to offer to open directly in shortcuts and import the shortcut there. There are still some bugs with that, especially if you're using a different system language than English, but they are working on that. So yeah, it's a service for people to share shortcuts, and it's currently limited for contributors to upload. So I've invited some people. You can see the names under the shortcuts there, because I need this to be scalable, and we don't have all the features that we want to have yet. And if we let like everyone upload before we add the new features, it's going to become really hard to migrate the data afterwards.
Yeah, it might also become really messy, right? In the UI and the, you mm-hmm. know, how we use this thing.
Yeah, so we're starting small and slow, and the few people that have upload access have already uploaded some really cool shortcuts, and we have a Twitter account. And I say we because even though currently all of the code is mine, I basically started this with Patrick, because he gave the idea for the name and he even wanted to actually do it, but he was with a bad internet connection that day. So I said to him, hey, I'll do this. And he is a contributor to the GitHub project. And also Doug, which I didn't know before, but he sent me some suggestions and we started talking. And turns out he's a great front-end developer, so which I'm not on the web. So it's kind of ironic that on iOS I like doing front-end stuff, but not on the web. So yeah. He offered to help, and he's going to help me. He just got his development setup finished installing right before we started this. And yeah, so people are helping, and I've already talked to some people who are willing to be curators for the service, because the idea is to have a curation aspect to it, so you can find like the best shortcuts easily. So yeah, and also Rafael, my friend, made a cool design for the service, which I showed you, didn't uh-huh. I?
Yeah.
So the current design is very bare bones. It's almost like a wireframe, mm-hmm. but the final design is really cool.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. You know, it's funny because we didn't talk so much during the past weekend because I was on a trip to Spain. And it's very funny because, you know, I come back and you've launched a service, you bought a PlayStation 4, you know, all these kind of things are happening. And I'm like, whoa, that's crazy, you know.
So I love that they threw in the PlayStation 4 in there.
Yeah, of course. This is huge for me. You know, we've been talking so many times about, you know, you should get a game console. You know, gaming is awesome. And now finally you got it. We're not going to talk about it now. We're going to save this, you know, save this this topic for a rainy day. When we're going to talk all about games. I'm really excited about that. But yeah, it's super cool. And one question I have is like, there's a sharing aspect to workflows already or shortcuts. And I guess this is something that you're piggybacking on, like the URL schemes that are actually used to import a shortcuts and a serialization and all those things. So is this something you think the shortcuts app will include itself, or is it something that you think you can keep doing as kind of a third party thing?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think they will probably add this back in the future, because currently the shortcuts app doesn't have the same... It has the gallery, but it's just like pre-defined stuff from Apple. So it doesn't have like a place for you to publish your workflows yourself.
Yeah.
So they could add it. I don't think they will soon. And even if they did, it's probably going to be more limited. So the idea with shortcuts is to be a very community-driven thing with a focus on discoverability. And also we have some ideas of like people being able to submit their own versions of a shortcut that already exists, and you can browse different variations of the same shortcut.
Oh, that's
which
nice.
I think would be really cool, because we noticed that people, when we post a shortcut, sometime after we post it, some people will reply with like, hey, I made this little change because I think it's better this way. So maybe we could incorporate that in the service itself.
Maybe you'll have a whole Git repository, version control.
We're going to have... like, of course, we're going to open it up for more people to upload in the future. And we're going to have like an author page and upvoting and all that good stuff. So, yeah, it's going to have lots of good features. And it's not something that I plan. It's not going to like become my full-time job. It's not even a priority side project for me.
Two weeks later.
It's something I hope that... other people are going to help maintain, just as with my like my WWDC app, I wouldn't be able to maintain that just myself anymore, but I have lots of people helping me, so I hope that it becomes the same thing. And I even got some shout out to our friends over at Mac Stadium. They are not a sponsor, but they gave me some free hosting because I mentioned that I was hosting on Mac Stadium and they liked it.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I want to get more into kind of detail about how you built this, and also kind of talk a little bit about server-side Swift, and because you're using Swift for the backend and for the server, which I think is really interesting. Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm also building a new site of my own, which is a new version of Swift by Sundell, which is my, you know, weekly blog and my other podcast and all the stuff that I'm doing about Swift development. So I think we should talk about that in more detail on a future episode as well, about like static site generation. Yeah, exactly. Cliffhanger. We're doing a lot of cliffhangers these days, but it's because we want to talk about so many things. And of course, we can't do it all on one episode.
Yeah. And the PS4 thing, and it requires, first of all, that the PS4 arrives.
That's
it's not here yet.
Little detail.
Yeah, and that I have some time to play. So, yeah, we can talk about games in a future show.
All right, so lots of cool things coming up here on Stacktrace. But that's it for this episode, and thank you so much for listening. Again, you can find us on Twitter at StackTracePod. You can find us on Patreon if you want to support this show with any amount that you can, you know, can spare. We would really, really appreciate that, because all the money that we get from that Patreon, it goes towards being able to do this show every single week and producing more and more content for you, our awesome listeners. So check us out on Patreon, which is patreon.com/StackTracePod. You can also find us at StackTracePodcast.fm, where you can find all the show notes for this episode, all the links, and all the other stuff that we do there as well. Finally, you can find both me and Rambo on Twitter. I am at John Sundell, and Rambo is at _inside. So thanks again for listening, and say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.